you suffer from chronic CFED or can't focus energy drain? Try over-the-counter Vibrin. One tablet contains the same caffeine as a cup of coffee, but without the calories or coffee breath. Vibrin, caffeine, not coffee. Taking Vibrin may result in a lack of drowsiness, improved productivity, and better cash flow from decreased coffee spending. Unexpected job promotions have been associated with Vibrin. Vibrin may decrease the urge to zone out, doze off, or exhibit signs of slacking. All jokes aside, always read the label, take only as directed, and limit caffeine as it may cause real side effects. Not for children under age 12.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. How y'all doing? What's the problem here? Hey, Willie, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right, I'm going to try and call him back again. For some reason, we got shut off for a minute.
Shit happens.
Yeah.
Shit.
Well, me calling back one more time. We'll get the manager of the heavyweight champion back on the line. I don't want to say his number out loud over the phone, over radio.
Don't want to do that, man. That'll get him. Oof.
Yeah. Here we go.
Hey, this is Jay.
Hey, Jay. We got.
It was weird. It was weird. It said thank you for using something.
Block Talk Radio.
Up.
Yeah. Did that. What it is we had a schedule episode supposed to start, and for some reason it switched over between the two. We talked about you've been with Deontay for a long time, haven't you?
Oh yeah, I've been with Deontay since his very first day in a boxing gym.
That's what I thought. Yeah.
That would have been in late 2005.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. He bronze medalist in the Olympics.
Yep. In fact, I had a guy tell me that we were the only boxer and coach in the heavyweight division's history to start together and go all the way to the heavyweight championship of the world. It's pretty remarkable, and I kind of put that to loyalty. Deontay had every opportunity. Everybody was tugging at him when he came out of the Olympics to, move here, move there. You need this. You don't need to be in Alabama, blah, blah, blah. But he believed in what we were doing and believed in the program and the plan. And it was really, something you don't see a lot of these days, which was loyalty.
You don't see much of it, and especially in the sport of boxing, Jay. You're right. You're absolutely right. You just don't see it. They go where the money is. Well, we got to ask you the obvious question: is Luis Ortiz next?
They're working on that now, and it hasn't been finalized or anything like that. But I'm from a personal standpoint, I'm hoping that's it. I hope that we get that. Deontay wanted that fight and was extremely frustrated when it fell apart due to Ortiz's positive test. It happened several times to Deontay with Warchick, with Povetkin, with Ortiz, and the level of frustration was really boiling over. So he's thrilled that WBC reinstated Ortiz, and Deontay wants that fight. He wants the big fight and to prove to people who he is and what he can do.
Hey, let me ask you this. Wilson here, Wilson Urena, how are you?
Good, how are you?
I'm good, man. Let me ask you this. Last fight out, he looked great. Was that the game plan to get him out of there like as soon as possible, or the cards happened to fall that way?
Well, it really just kind of happened that way. We didn't you know, Deontay didn't bum rush him or, you know, go on kind of a full out assault type of a thing. Stavern, really, if you look at the first round of Chris Areola against Deontay, it was identical to what Stavern was doing. I noticed it in the first round. He had his guard high. He was really trying to get his feet positioned. Or I think Areola only threw about three punches the first round against Deontay. It was really more about positioning and trying to find a comfort mm-hmm. zone of where he can be successful, you know, and where he needs to be in terms of his space and everything. It's just that he got caught, you know, did not get caught early. But Stavern had his hands high, everything, you know, doing everything that I guess he should have done. He just got caught right down the middle with a perfect 1-2. And after that, it was just a matter of finishing the job.
It was such a beautiful jab that it just opened him up, you know. It was beautiful.
If you look at the speed of Deontay's jab, that entire fight, I think that it was really the jab was faster than Stavern could mentally react. I think it was like Stavern was like, okay, next time he jabs, bam. Okay, well, bam. You know, and it was so fast. It was. Deontay was really so focused and so ready, and I think that that he just showed it.
Now with Joshua obviously trying to stall the fight, and Ortiz failing the drug test and the prior stuff that you mentioned, like Povetkin and guys like that. Now I'm wondering, do you guys like? It seems like he's eager to fight Ortiz. I saw him at the post-fight when they had words in the ring and whatnot. I'm just wondering, do you feel like that will help him along the way? Like it seems like he wants the big name because he wants to shout a lot of people up. And it seems like this is a fight that probably is going to get made. And to be honest with you, it's probably the best opponent available too. So, from that aspect, do you think like he needs Luis Ortiz as much as Luis Ortiz needs him? Because he could walk away. He doesn't need to give him an opportunity after what happened, but he is.
Yeah, he's really granting him a gift, as it were, sure. Because he would certainly be well within his rights to say, you know, this isn't you did this once before. You know, you had a heavyweight title fight and you tested positive after the fight. You had another heavyweight title fight and you tested positive before the fight. So there's something going on when you get these big opportunities. There's something going on that, you know, you feel the need to do extra things or something. So Deontay would be within his rights to say, I'm just not going to deal with that. But he's really giving Ortiz a gift. Now, as far as Deontay's concerned, you know, he wants the biggest fights possible. We pushed Joshua so hard that they actually came out with a video, which I was thrilled that they did. And they said, Deontay, we're ready. We want the fight. But first, we're going to do this, which is really their way of saying we don't
right
want
now.
The fight
yeah.
Right now. And we, meaning the English, are the holdup, not Wilder. And I think they were kind of forced to admit that, and I thought that was great because it swung public opinion in Deontay's favor. Now, as far as, you know, people – on Deontay's case about, you know, this guy or that guy, you know, they're always going to be there. Deontay could beat Stavern, Ortiz, Povetkin, and Joshua in the same night, and you're still going to have some people that don't think you've done anything. So that's exactly. A little bit the nature of the internet and yeah. the ability of every person to have a voice. But at the same time, people have to realize it wasn't Deontay that caused the problems with Povetkin. It wasn't Deontay that caused the problems with Ortiz. So the biggest fights, the ones that he's been after, it wasn't Deontay that postponed the fight with Joshua. You see, so it's Deontay's wanting these fights from the get-go, and it hasn't been his fault these have happened. The other thing people do is they use 20/20 hindsight. Is a great fight going in. If it's a good fight going in, you should give credit to the guy who won. I'll give you an example. Lomachenko and Rigondeaux, yeah. It's a great fight going in. So you can't come back after the fact and say, Rigo is no good, which is what they do with Deontay. You should give credit to Lomachenko. You should give credit to Deontay. When Deontay fought Malik Scott was 36-1, and his one loss was very controversial. Nobody, liked that fight as far as, thought that Deontay should fight a mover like that, thought that would be problematic for him. Deontay got him out of there and won and didn't get the credit. With Stiverne, world champion, knocked out Areola, Deontay handles him, wins every round. And then people want to talk about Stiverne was dehydrated, and so on. So for some reason with Deontay, people always find the negative. But we're just going to keep doing what we do.
With the last fight, they'll probably say, oh, well, the guy was inactive for a while, blah, 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 and so on. I hear it man. Trust me. Go ahead.
We've been covering this sport for quite a while, Jay, and I've been covering it since way before the social media age, and it has changed some unbelievable. A lot of things that people accuse fighters of ducking now and stuff like that, that's been going on for years. The business side of the sport's been going on for years. But I completely stand by y'all here 100%. And I'm not going to lie to you, Jay, I've not always been the biggest backer of Deontay. I've always liked him as a person. I've loved his story, and I like him as a person. He's a good guy, And you just helped cement that a little more with telling me about his loyalty and stuff. I knew y'all had been together for quite a while, but I didn't know it ever since the very beginning.
With Deontay, he really is, a guy of his word. And when he told Ortiz, "I'll grant you that opportunity," his next call, right there in Miami, I was in Tuscaloosa, he calls me. Get on the phone with Shelby now. Make the fight. In his mind, this is not just talk. This is, I promised him I would give him another opportunity. Let's make that happen. And he has been nonstop about that.
Yeah, I was looking forward to that fight too, man. But that's out of his control. People don't get that sometimes.
And it's a good fight. Ortiz is a puncher. He's undefeated. He's got an extensive amateur background. He's big. He's strong. He's solid in all facets of the game. It's a very, very good fight. It's a fight that is really for the fans, because Deontay could certainly, having just fulfilled his mandatory, Deontay could pick the number 14 or 15 guy out of the WBC and make good money fighting those guys. But he's not. He's going for the highest available ranked guy that we can get in the ring in a short period of time for the fans, And I think that's a great thing. Just fought in November, coming back and fighting, wanted to fight in February, but it's looking like potentially if we get Ortiz, it'll be early March. And you got to remember, before Deontay, when you had Vitaly, who I really like, and you had Stiverne, these guys were fighting once every year and a half. I think Deontay's fought 7 times, about to be 8 times in under 3 years. You got to consider, he's had 2 broken hands.
Yeah.
He's had torn bicep. He's had a third degree burn. He's had an eye injury and still has pulled this off. 2 surgeries. And he's still on a pace like that.
I think early on too, he fought like I think twice within a month span or something like that early in his career, if I recall correctly. He's always been like that type of guy that wants to stay busy.
And I tell you what's amazing about Deontay, and I think it'll prove itself to be true. If everything goes well, we get the fights we want and are able to, you know, have the unification fight and win the unification fight, generally speaking, the sanctioning bodies will then say, you have to fight our number one contender within 4 months or we're stripping you, you know, that kind of thing. And that's their way of getting that title back to vacant status so they can make more money in sanctioning fees. Deontay is the kind of guy who will say, absolutely, I'll be ready in 3 months, 4 months. You know, we'll knock him off one at a time. He will fight every 2 to 3 months if you let him. Barring injury, he absolutely loves being in the ring.
Speaking of injury, how's the hand holding up?
Oh, you know, the great thing is that 2 fights in a row now, no hand injuries. You know, Everlast has they used to have 2 gloves. It was the MX and the Pro-Tec. The MX was the puncher's glove, and the Pro-Tec is really the safety glove. Well, now they got one in the middle called the Power Lock, and Deontay went from the puncher's glove to the Power Lock, which gave him more protection in his hand. And since we've gone to that, we've had 0 problems. So I'm happy to report, you know, 2 fights in a row now, no problems at all. Hands are healthy, feels great, ready to fight.
That's great. He has always wanted to stay busy. It's funny you mentioned that about staying busy, because Wilson is a journalist for us at freekingsboxing.com, and he did a blistering article on a couple of fighters that believe they only need to fight once a year anyway.
Yeah, I did. I'm only 38 years old, but I'm used to seeing guys fight 3-4 times a year, and now it's like one. Twice, you know, I get the business.
And some guys have management problems. Some guys have promotional issues. And a lot of that, you know, a lot of that may be, you know, come back to the fighter. I know several fighters have been enacted because they, you know, they signed different things with different people, and then it went to court and all that. Deontay has always, you know, kept the straight and narrow view. And we've knocking on wood, We've stayed out of any sort of, you know, litigation or anything like that. We just have stayed busy. We've also fought here in Alabama, which are shows that I co-promote. Before he was champion, Deontay fought 5 times in Alabama. Since he's been champion, he's fought 4 more. Those are fights that maybe would not have happened had we not been able, you know, I've been doing professional boxing shows since 1995. These are club shows. You know, no TV, no casino type shows. And just to be able to do that and sell tickets, was able to keep Deontay busier than most guys were being kept. And then once he won the title, of course, we did have TV come in and all that. And it's been a great thing. We hope to fight in Alabama again sometime, you know, down the road.
He's got special power, man. I mean, did that amaze you when you first saw him? His power, I mean, it's out of this world, man.
Well, there were 2 wow moments with Deontay. One was, you know, when he first came in the gym, I started showing him a few things, and then I walked away, which is what I usually do. And then I watched from afar. And 99% of the guys that you do that with, they quit being as diligent. You know, they're really diligent about what they're doing when you're right on top of them. When you walk away, not so much. But Deontay was actually just as diligent. He cared just as much when he didn't think I was looking. And I said, wow, you know, maybe we have something here. The second wow moment was he was sparring a journeyman heavyweight that had maybe 14-10 record, just a solid journeyman pro heavyweight. And Deontay was maybe a month in the gym and all arms and legs, you know, Deontay hit him with a right hand and knocked him down. And the pro heavyweight got up with a big smile on his face and said, whatever you do, keep him. So I knew that there was something there. But I can tell you firsthand, I had the bodysuit on, and Deontay hit me just on the side and below the bodysuit, and I had to have hernia surgery from that shot. Mark Breland took a right hand on the mitt and dislocated his right shoulder, and Cuz Hill who has really long, skinny fingers. His finger was sticking out a little bit too much and took a hook and dislocated his finger. So I can tell you the power is real. It's not manufactured. Even Jamil McClain, who was sparring with us a couple of years ago, had fought for the world title four times. And Jamil said it best. He said, you know, even in 18s and headgears, it's not like you're getting hit by a human being. It's like you're getting hit by something other than a human being. And for a guy like Jamil to say that, you know, that's not me saying it, or you saying it, or I mean, that's a guy that's fought for the world title four times saying it.
Yeah, he means. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm wondering. So, what's the game plan for 2018? Like, do you guys look to look busy, stay busy, 2-3 fights, or is it Ortiz and then try to land Joshua? Or
I think the same thing will come into play. I think if all goes well with Ortiz, no injuries, everything comes out the way we want it, then we go right back to you know, to putting the pressure on Joshua to unify and make them tell the world yes or no. And hopefully it's yes in the summertime. We'll go to England. We'll go to the moon. We can do it in their backyard. We can do it up at Eddie Hearn's castle, you know, one of the big rooms there. It doesn't matter. You know, we have no problem traveling. We're not the issue, you know. So we're gonna see if that's the plan. If that's not the plan, then and they don't want that, then we'll get right back in the ring as soon as we can. I'd love three fights in 18. You know, I'd love three fights in 18, if not four, but I understand that these things at this level take longer to promote. So, you know, three is probably the best one can hope for.
Oh, okay.
Hey, guys, I'm going to let a caller call in. If they want to call in at 215-383-5777 and see if they got a question for Jay while we got him on here. Is that okay, Jay?
Sure. Sure.
Okay. All right.
I got to ask, because I know you guys teach him a lot. Sometimes he tends to get a little wild in there. Is that more of a like the adrenaline gets the best of him, or he just sees a guy in trouble and just goes on an all-out assault?
Well, that's a good question, and you know, the answer to that is he's always had that in him where he would get a little bit, what, you know, I call it more unique than wild, but he throws punches from different angles. And you know, but he was effective doing it. Even in the amateurs, he would land the shot. Now, I remember thinking one time he's a little bit out of sorts, but he's good at it. You know,
it's getting
different. It's awkward, but he's good at it. Now, if you watch the Stavern, the second Stavern fight, you see the 1-2 that knocks Stavern down. The first knockdown was as picturesque, you know, as you can textbook as you can get. So he can do it as textbook as possible, but he also has that other element to his game, you know, where it can come from a little bit of an unusual angle. I tell people all the time, look at Vladimir and Vitaly Klitschko. Vladimir is the most textbook boxer probably of the last 20 years in the heavyweight division. Vitaly didn't do anything by the book. His hands are by his knees, his head's out front. His punches are all over the place, and yet both of them will be first ballot Hall of Famers. So there's a little bit of more than one way to get something done, and Deontay fortunately, you know, has the ability to do both.
Hey, I saw that. Yeah. I saw that in the Stavern fight. Actually, in the first knockdown was, like you said, picture perfect.
Great
jab. Yeah, great jab right down the pipe. Poop. Okay, he's down. And then the one where he actually put him out, he did something where he stepped to the side, and then he came back to the other side. And I'm like, man, I didn't even see that coming.
And see, and that's something that's more like almost a basketball move. It's something really no heavyweight can do, is to come in, and then all of a sudden Deontay shifted very hard to the right, which is something he's worked on a lot. You know, you got to imagine if you're dazed and confused and you know, you're looking through semi blurry eyes and somebody's coming right at you, so you get your hands up, then all of a sudden he's not there and you're feeling something thudding on the side of your head rather than the front. You know, it's an effective thing. There's more science to it than it looks like to the average person.
You're right. It was almost like he faked the layup one way and shot it with the other hand. You know what I mean?
Right.
All right, we got
yes.
I've got a caller on the line here from Houston, Texas. Blake, how you doing today, buddy?
Hey, I'm all right. How you doing?
You got a question you want to ask?
Yeah, I was wanting to ask, will we get the Joshua fight this year? And would you prefer it in Wembley or in Vegas or in Barclays or somewhere?
Well, Blake, I'll tell you, I am very confident that if Deontay and Joshua both, A, keep winning, B, stay injury-free, that fight will happen. My best hope is for June or July of 18. And the reason I say that is because in England you have a weather situation. There's only certain months in England that you can fight outdoors because it's a very rainy country. So you have to pick your months carefully. If that fight happens in England, certainly they would want it to be in Wembley or whatever the biggest outdoor soccer arena they could find. And the more seats the better as far as we're concerned, obviously.
That's right.
If it were in the United States, I don't think that there's anywhere that could hold a fight of that magnitude except for Las Vegas.
Right. Hey, Jay, you know what you just did, right? And with that answer, you gave him another excuse. Now they're going to tell you it's raining and we can't fight this month. So.
Hey, we'll fight in the rain.
hey, whatever it takes,
right?
Yeah,
they put a camp here.
They'll put some raincoats on the fighters and call it a day.
Well, you know what's funny is Deontay fought a fight outdoors in Tuscaloosa, Alabama at the amphitheater that was brand new construction. And it's built right in front of the river. And we fought in July. It's about 110 degrees. Nobody counted on was that 110 degrees in July on the river brings every sort of moth, mosquito, and everything else. So the guys were literally like punching between insects. So it was kind of a unique situation, but we got through it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I've seen some crazy stuff on some on club shows and stuff. I remember being in, I think it was Clarksburg, West Virginia one time, Jay, and we had to go to the back of a food line to weigh in and stuff. And this was like, I was with Vernon Forrest at the time, and this was back in like his, I think like his ninth or tenth fight, it was somewhere in that area, you know. But you see some crazy things.
The craziest thing I've ever seen at a club show that I've ever heard about, it wasn't my show, but this show, they forgot to have a doctor at the show, which of course an ambulance. They forgot to have an ambulance at the show, which of course, you know, no ambulance, no show. And so they called the ambulance company and were told, sorry, you know, we're all booked out. There's nothing we can do for you. And this guy's sitting here with 500 people in the room that paid to be there. All the fighters are ready, and there's no show. So in true small promoter fashion, he had a buddy of his fake a heart attack, called the ambulance, called 911, and they had to come out.
that's pretty good.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's actually pretty good. That's creative right there.
Yeah, and then once the ambulance came out, they put the defibrillator, you know, things that they shock you with, and the guy started saying he was feeling better, and he sat up, and then they had to pay the ambulance guy a ton of money to stay, but they got it done.
Good.
Blake, you got another question for him, buddy?
I was wondering about Luis Ortiz. And would that fight ever occur, or would that ever come back around?
As a matter of fact, that's what we were just talking about. It's not finalized yet, so you're in on the front end of this. You're in on the news, the scoop. We are hopefully going to get that fight ASAP. We're hopeful that this thing happens as early as early March, and nothing's finalized yet, but it's a fight that Deontay wants. It's a fight that I want, and we hope we get it really soon.
Well, I'll go ahead and tell you, Jay. I talked to Jay Jimenez, manager for Ortiz, and he told me it's like March the 3rd is what they're aiming for.
Yeah, I know, Jay. And
yeah.
Yeah, everybody, you know, everybody's ready. I think everybody's on board. It's a matter of lining up the finances and the sponsors and the TV, which I assume would be Showtime and all that. I know there's another fight in New York the same night with Kovalev.
Yeah, there is.
But
I think they would be
more worried about us than we would be about them.
Yeah, because exactly. I want to go to yours. I ain't trying to go to theirs.
Yeah, whenever I was doing media credentials earlier today, because I'm the editor in chief of Three Kings Boxing.com. I'm doing media credentials early, and he goes, "I want to go to the Wilder fight. I want to go to the Wilder fight." I don't need to go to the Wilder. I'm like, okay.
Blake, you got another question, buddy, before we let you go?
I was wondering, because I know Deontay, he does the Vada out. Would they? Is Joshua going to be, is that going to be enforced for Joshua to do the Vada testing too? Because I know Deontay made certain statements about it.
Yeah, you know, that's a very good question. Yeah, we would certainly want Vada involved. They're number one in the world. They're the most stringent and the most reliable and the most, I guess the best word would be extensive. They do urine, they do blood, and they can come at any time, day or night. They can come at 3 a.m. They can come 15 times in one day to your place and make submit samples. So that's what we want. It's too dangerous a sport for it not to be a level playing field. So we believe that Joshua's clean. We believe Deontay's clean. But we want them all tested the same.
Okay. Because that was my next question. I was like, does Deontay really think he's dirty? Okay.
Yeah, we wanted to be a level playing field because, okay. You know, if you test positive in track and field or swimming, you know, you may win when you wouldn't have won. You may cost your opponent some sponsorship dollars or a medal. But in boxing, you know, you're literally enhancing your ability to hurt and assault another human being. And, you know, that's it's just too dangerous a sport for that. But we want it to be clean.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
All right, Blake, buddy, we appreciate the call. We'll take another call here in just a few minutes. But All right. Willie, you got any more questions for him? He's pretty much touched on everything I wanted to know. I kind of figured he would anyway.
Well, you know, he has a mean streak in the ring, man. But outside of the ring and interviews, this guy's got a smile on his face all the time. I'm like, man, he's like a killer in the ring and like the sweetest person outside of him, man. What is it? He just turns the switch on or something?
Yeah, he really does. You know, he's the nicest guy in the world until it comes to fight time. In fact, he tells us on fight day, you know, no pictures, no autographs from nobody. I don't, you know, cause he's transforming. And the day before or the day after, you know, if he stopped and a big crowd comes around him and it takes him 2-3 hours, everybody will get a picture, an autograph, whatever they want. He is, you know, it's just that one day where he gets into bronze bomber mode from Deontay Wilder mode.
Yeah, man. I mean, he's in I love his jab, but one thing I haven't touched on is when you first saw him, did his speed and athleticism for a big guy shock you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You say his feet or speed?
Speed.
Feet?
Speed.
I can't hear you.
Speed.
Yeah. Yeah, his hand speed, yeah, he's much faster than you think he is, and it really doesn't even translate, to be honest with you, it doesn't translate even on video quite like it does when you're there in person and see it. I have to stay in really good shape, as does Mark, and as does Coach Cuz, just to do the mitts and pick up on that, because those hands are very, very fast. And he trains in 20-ounce gloves, and so you can imagine when he puts on the 10s to fight.
Yeah,
it really, really feels fast.
He's athletic for a big guy. Like, man, this guy could have probably played in the NBA or something. He moves well in there. Like, he throws that jab. They throw a punch and he's able to get back away from the punch and dodge it. Not too many big guys are doing that.
Yeah, and he's still learning. You know, that's the thing about it, is he's still willing to work. He's still willing to learn. He's still a young fighter. You have to understand the way it works. The heavier you are, the later your prime is. So, you know, a 32-year-old 106 pounder is an old man. A 32-year-old middleweight is right in his prime. A 32-year-old heavyweight is a young guy. So Deontay's just getting to that point.
Yeah.
Where he's getting prime.
Yeah, I agree 100% with that. When exactly did Mark Breland come on with y'all, Jay?
Mark usually comes in for let's say if the camp is 7 weeks, and then we travel, Mark will be in camp for over a month straight.
Yeah,
so we'll get the camp started and kind of get everything going and get it lined up and get it working, and then we bring Mark in.
Yeah. I've known Mark. He was a hell of a technician as an amateur. I remember he was a little older than me as an amateur coming up, but we fought in a couple of the same tournaments and stuff, you know, when he was younger.
Oh, yeah, Mark's a great guy. In fact, I met Mark at the Olympic trials. He had Danny Jacobs, and I had Deontay, and I went up to him, and I'm a guy that had, 4,000 or 5,000 fights on tape, as a kid coming up. And so I said, hey, Mark, introduced myself. And I said, if there's any of your fights that you don't have that you would like, chances are I probably have every one of them or could get them. And he said, oh, thanks. And just kind of, walked
it off.
And so then he came back to me and he goes, you got, Mark whispers, how about you got Rafael Pineda fight? And I said, of course I got that. That's easy.
Yeah.
He goes, what about, he started naming these tougher ones. I'm like, yep. So anyway, I went home, and I know he thought I probably would forget about it, but I made him the DVD and sent it to him, and he called me and was, man, thank you so much. That was really great. And the next thing I knew, Shelly Finkel, my co-manager, who also managed Mark, called me, and I said, Shelly, there's something I want to talk to you about bringing somebody onto the team. And Shelly goes, well, that's why I'm calling you. What do you think about Mark Breland? And I said, well, that's what I was going to call you about.
That came about.
But, you're looking at such an obvious, because Mark was so tall for his weight class and thin, and his use of distance and the jab and everything. We just thought it would help. And as a trainer, I'm probably unique in that I don't have an ego when it comes to bringing in something or somebody that can help. It's probably one of the reasons we've been together as long as we have. I'm not a guy that thinks I'm the one and only, and everybody else is, sometimes happened. If somebody can help us and their chemistry is right, I have no problem whatsoever with having that help come in.
Exactly. Yeah, I agree.
You look at it as a team, and that's always
exactly.
That's a good attitude to have. I mean, whatever it takes, right?
Yeah.
We actually kind of run ours more like a football team than a boxing team. They're like, well, who's the trainer? And I'm like, well, I'm the head coach. I'm the head coach, but Mark's the lead in the corner. Mark wraps his hands, and Mark's the lead in the corner. Coach Cuz does a lot of the mitt work. I'll do a lot of the vocal work. It's just kind of a team effort.
I like the fact that, I like the story behind Deontay. did he walk into your gym, or like how did you find him? Or I know the background story. He started boxing due to his daughter and everything. Hope she's doing well, right?
She's doing great. She's doing great.
Oh, great.
She's doing really, really great.
I love
all the things. She was born with spina bifida and had many operations, and they thought she wouldn't be able to walk, and they thought she wouldn't be able to go to school, and they thought she would never run, and all the things they thought she would never do, she's doing every day.
Go ahead.
I've got another caller on the line here. Let me see who it is. Thank you. Four Corners Boxing Talk. So who is this? How can I help?
It's Trey from Houston.
Hey, Trey, how you doing? We got J.D. here. He's the manager of Deontay Wilder, and he's been training since he first turned since an amateur. You got anything you want to ask him?
Yeah, man, I'm trying to figure out when that Anthony Joshua fight going to happen.
That's probably a very popular question.
That's a very popular question tonight, huh?
Yeah.
Well, Trey, I tell you, we tried so hard to make it, and they came out and said they didn't want it right now. They even came on video and said they wanted to do some other things first. So we are we're hoping to get right back in the ring, possibly against Luis Ortiz. And if Joshua fights Joseph Parker, it's going to be a little bit like the college football playoffs. Let the best four heavyweights fight, and the two winners bring it together for unification in the summer. That's what we're after.
Yeah,
that's a good way to
look
at it.
Like, it looked like Anthony Joshua a little scared.
Anthony's a great fighter and a good guy, and I think he's being told, what to do. But fighters have a lot of power. If a fighter tells his manager, make this fight, I want this fight, usually that fight will get made. So I'm hopeful that Anthony will, after his fight with Parker, if it gets made, that he will say, get me Wilder, and that will be what gets it done.
Well, that's what happened with Ortiz.
Yeah, exactly. That's how I know firsthand, and I'll tell you what, to go off on a little side tangent here, I was in the, when you asked about when Deontay came in the gym first, he just walked in the gym one day, wanting to learn to box. And what was remarkable about it was, up until that point, I had not been the trainer. Our original trainer got a better job in his other job, and it meant that he couldn't come to the gym anymore. So I looked for somebody who could be the trainer. I was the promoter, sparring partner, manager. And so I went around to different people that I trusted to get some tips on training fighters. And one of the best that helped me was Ronnie Shields right there in Houston.
Oh, wow.
And, Ronnie took me in his house and took me to the gym and just could not have been nicer, didn't know me at all. And really, really spent a few days with me. I took a bunch of notes. I took the things I liked, the things I would do different. I put it all together, and I said, okay, I'm now the trainer at Sky Boxing. I've been in boxing since I'm 14 years old. I'm now the trainer. First guy in the door, Deontay Wilder.
Oh, wow. What a way to start.
Isn't that crazy?
Career, huh?
that's a hell of a way to start, huh? I bet you the original trainer right now doesn't feel like he traded in the back and
forth. Well, it's funny because the original trainer is my brother, and he actually helps us with scouting reports and on our opponents. And he's not, we're very, very different. He's very much chew you out, kind of a guy. Get on your case. I'm a little more new school. He's more old school, and he told me himself. He said, I probably would have run Wilder off.
he's probably right. Yeah, I'd been to say he's probably right.
Yeah, I like what you said.
It's one of those things where the fighter and the trainer, it has to be a chemistry. Emmanuel Stewart was one of the greatest trainers of all time, no question about it. Great guy, great to me, wonderful trainer. But probably the worst trainer that Nassim Ahmed could have ever picked, not the right guy, not
point,
the right
Jake.
Fit. The same with Jermaine Taylor, just not a good fit. For trainers and fighters, It has to be a fit. I mean, Freddie Roach is a tremendous trainer. He's not the right trainer for everybody. It has to be the fit has to be right. He and Cotto, he and Pacquiao, great fits. But the fit has to be right between trainer and fighter.
And that goes with the fighter style. Manuel Stewart was really good with tall fighters. So,
mm-hmm.
you know.
And Nassim was short with tree trunk legs and an extremely
right.
unusual and unique style that did not really need to be, you know, teaching Nassim to box properly. Was not the way to go.
I'm 38 years old, and I remember as a kid watching fights, watching Hamed fight, and I'll be screaming at the TV, like, what are you doing? Keep your hands up. Why are you going straight back like that?
making every mistake in the book. But
everything
him,
they tell you not to
it
do,
worked.
But it worked. So.
Yeah, well, Ali was the same way. Ali,
yeah.
you know, Ali hands down, pull straight back from punches. You know, all hasn't thrown a body shot still, you know. and yet arguably the greatest fighter, you know, of all time. So it really is, and Emmanuel's probably one of the greatest trainers, you know, of all time.
It really does come down
to chemistry.
Right? Yeah, I rate him and Eddie Futch right there together as far as two of the greatest trainers of all time.
Ray Arsenal was tremendous. Eddie Futch was absolutely phenomenal.
I think with Joshua, the thing that's holding it up is probably more Eddie Hearn than Joshua.
I think you're right. I think you're right.
I'll be the first to tell you, Jay. Me and Eddie, we'll tell you, I talk to him about two or three times a week, you know, for just news correspondence, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And plus, you know, any international media calls and stuff like that we do, I'm on there with him. And he's the best guy I've ever seen at talking in a circle. He's the best I've ever seen at talking in a circle. I've spent 30 minutes on the phone with him and still wondering what the hell did I even – I didn't find out anything. You know, I didn't find out nothing.
That means you found out what he wanted you to.
Exactly.
That's right.
Exactly.
It seems like no matter how many calls you're going to take, they're just going to keep asking about Joshua. And the public wants it. I mean, this could, you know, this, but the heavyweight division is what makes boxing go. People don't know that. But to a casual fan, for some reason, they always go for the big guys, man. It's like a magnet, man. I had somebody that doesn't know the sport at all. After the Wilder KO, Stubborn TKO, or
yeah.
Well, you know the old saying. You know, there's just something about boxing anyway. I mean, you know, you go to an intersection, you got two guys playing checkers on one corner. Two guys playing cards on another corner, two guys playing golf on another corner, and two guys in a fight on the last corner. You know, which one are you going to watch? You know, that's boxing in a nutshell. And then you add to it the power the heavyweights bring. Any heavyweight can hit any other heavyweight in the world right and end their night. And that's, you know, that's just the way it is in the heavyweight division. So that's the excitement. You could have a guy that loses 11 rounds, 2 minutes and 50 seconds, he's still in the fight.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, it is like Wilson mentioned a minute ago, it's the division that drives boxing. All right, now,
mm-hmm.
like most of us purists are telling all of our friends and stuff, like this, you know, when Lomachenko and Rigondeaux fight me, and hey, listen, you know, this is the two of the most skilled guys of all time, you know. Well,
right.
I mean, turned in to be a dud, but it was more so a dud because of the way it happened. You know what I mean? Now,
right. Oh, absolutely.
Whereas a casual fan comes in and watches what Deontay did against Bermain, and that's what they want to see. You know what I mean? It's the reason Mike Tyson electrified the division back in the 80s, you know? And
that's exactly right.
Yeah,
that's exactly right. It's it does. It attracts more than just the purist. It attracts that everyday guy that's sitting at the bar, and he's watching at the sports bar, and they got the fight on, and he just stops. And, oh, whoa! Did you see that? And then everybody's looking at the TV. That's heavyweight boxing.
Exactly.
And today's heavyweight, went through a string in the 80s before Mike cleaned it up. He went through a string of guys that were, relatively out of shape, relatively lazy, a lot of hugging, and it kind of got to be the hug and clinch division. And then Mike, cleaned it up. And today's heavyweights, a lot of very athletic. You don't see a lot of heavyweight fights where they just kind of lean on each other and hug and clinch the whole fight. Heavyweight fights are a lot more exciting than they used to be.
Oh, yeah, no doubt, no doubt. I've had people tell me that the skill level has dropped off, and I'm going to say something that I normally tell everybody. To me, overall, it probably has. Like our amateur system in America has gotten, it hasn't that it's gotten worse, it's just that the other countries have maintained a system that we haven't been able to do. You know what I mean?
Right.
Today's coaches don't teach fundamentals, in my opinion, like they did when we were kids. Tom Boartes was my coach here in Augusta, Georgia, and he preached basic stuff to me. I mean, I've had duct tape wrapped around my head and my left and my right hand so many times it ain't funny. You don't know how many times I swept the gym floor. Different stuff. And
we put a napkin under different fighters' chins to, they have to keep that napkin from falling,
exactly.
To keep it chin on the chest. You don't see a lot of that. I think probably the problem is.
You mentioned Boyd Jones earlier, and I remember I fought him twice in the, NAMI. And he never seen me fight because we didn't get tape, I went to, I think I first time was in Pensacola, actually, where he lives. I got fought him in the PAL tournament, And he, watching him, and I'm like, well, man, I ought to be able to beat this guy easy. But once you get in the ring with him, his hands are so fast, it's unbelievable. He did everything wrong,
right.
But he could hit, the left hand was on top of me before I could even breathe good. Yeah.
and I think, part of the thing is, and this is something Emmanuel Stewart told me that I thought was so important. He said, nowadays, the coaches are doing all the work on the mitts. Nobody is letting the punch go all the way out to its full extension. And that's why you don't have many punchers anymore is, the coach is meeting the punch before the punch has even gone 6 inches. The coach has hit it with the mitts because he's trying to impress somebody on YouTube or Facebook, and they got fighters doing mitts blindfolded and all that kind of thing. And, it works for Floyd and nobody else. Everybody wants to do it like Floyd, and it's garbage and it's choreographed and it's a routine, and they see Floyd do it, so they want to do it. And none of them are learning to turn into their punches. We don't do that. We go, full extension, let the guys punch, let the guys punch, make an impact, hit that mid at say 92%. The other 8% is, kind of through the guy's face, so to speak. You don't want the guy to throw a punch and you've stopped his, his glove 2 inches from when he started to throw it, which is what a lot of them are doing today.
Yeah, they are. It's all about flashiness, look good for a YouTube video, and that's about all it is. And I've said it 100 times, man. Ain't nobody fights like that. You squared up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And my friend Russ Amber said it best. I showed him a video of some guy throwing, 27 punch combinations with 6 dips, 4 hops, and 5 side straddle hops in between, And Russ said, not only has he never done that in a fight, but nobody has ever done that in a fight. It should be task specific. It should look like what you're actually going to do in the ring. That's the value. You can go to a basketball court and you got kids working on setting picks and layups and passing and dribbling on one end of the court, and you got kids on the other end of the court shooting from half court. Well, my money is going to be on the kids trying to learn the real fundamentals, not the flashy stuff.
Exactly. I agree 100%. It's always been that way for me as far as boxing. If you listen to our show any, whether it be on radio or we got another show called Three Kings Boxing, and we got a third host on there, 2K, and we are very technical. We do technical breakdowns on everything, and we preach this. You know what I mean? We do. We preach it, and all three of us do, me and Wilson and 2K. So, And watching these videos nowadays, don't touch them, but, I mean, it's like, I mean, I don't know. You know, I haven't trained a kid since I had a kid named Jacob Hudson here in Augusta, Georgia, that was pretty good. And This has been, he fought Cotto in 2000, I believe. So it's been 15, 16 years since he left. He left the pro game at 7-0 and become a preacher.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah. And
he went a different route.
Our favorite one is that John Scully brings up that I always get a kick out of is he says, if I see one more video with the half moon hook, 6 foot, you know, from a coach, 6 feet over the guy's head, he said, like what good that does, I have no idea. And I said, you know, you should, with the mitt, you should absolutely smack your fighter. If he drops his hand, pow, you know, because that's realistic. Man. That's what's going to happen.
Yeah, that's what we do.
Don't purposely miss him to the left, to the right, way over his head, because he's not learning anything. He's not learning anything other than he knows you're not going to hit him, so he's not worried about moving. I guarantee you his opponent's going to hit him.
It's almost like they do it to look good, and that's it.
Yeah, you can always tell when it's about the coach. You can always tell when it's about the coach because on YouTube or wherever, the last thing you'll see after the pop, 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 whoop, whoop, pop, 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 the last thing you'll see is the coach looking at the camera and giving a little nod like, yeah.
Yeah.
That's how you know it's all. That's how you know it's a show.
Yeah, you know what drives me crazy about that is the social media. Like when these videos go up, they're like, oh, my God, look at that. That looks great. And I'm like saying to myself, okay, if you say so. You know, I'm one of those people that I feel like you should always stick to, how could I put it? You as a young fighter, if you learn things like that, if you don't learn to move your head, things like that, those things could become habits. And then those habits could show up in fights. And I don't know, man. I guess that's old school of me or something.
No. That's exactly right. We work on clinches. I'll lock down one of his arms. He'll kind of work to get it, try to get it free. While he'll pivot and try to come under and come to the side. You know, we're working like a real clinch situation. We also work in sparring. Where Deontay will spar with one eye closed, just in case, you get in a fight and that happens, which, of course, has happened twice now. It's Taburn the first time, as well as Duopah. We'll also spar, while I'll whisper to him in the corner, okay, this round your left hand's broken. And he'll either throw it and miss it on purpose so the other guy doesn't know he's not using it, or he'll feign it a lot. You know, just these different things. Situational things that can come up because they do come up.
Situational form, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
They do come up.
I mean,
so you have to be prepared because Lord knows we've had our share of mid fight injuries.
Now I was going to ask you, when exactly did he get hurt in that areola fight?
Third round, best I can tell, third round.
That's what I thought.
Maybe the fourth round for the bicep. I think the third round the hand broke, the fourth round the bicep. They both could have happened at the same time, though. I'm not sure.
How did he get him out of there with that injury?
I know. It's amazing because I had another guy tear his bicep, and he told me the pain was just excruciating. But Deontay's a unique individual. He's got a tolerance level for pain that's not common.
Okay, I'm going to ask you the ever-important question that we hear on Facebook all the time, Jay. Do you think Deontay's got the jaw to take the Anthony Joshua punch?
Well, you know, you hope you don't have to, but of course it's boxing, so you're going to take some shots, no question about it. Yeah, I believe Deontay, you know, can stand up to Anthony's power and stand up to anybody's power. You know, Anthony also has the ability to take a shot. I know people say, you know, he got wobbled against Dillon White and he got hurt, knocked down against Klitschko, but you're talking about, you know, two very, very good punchers, and he came back and won both those fights. So
yeah,
just because you've been wobbled or knocked down does not mean you can't take a punch. I mean, it's heavyweight boxing and everybody can punch.
Exactly. I agree 100%. The shot that Klitschko hit him with probably finishes 95% of the fighters in the sport.
Oh, yeah, no doubt.
And the reason I asked it about Deontay's chin, you hear more about it because we haven't seen his get tested like that. You know what I mean? We have seen Joshua persevere and his resilience work for him. But I don't think he's been hit like Deontay can hit him either, though. Deontay,
right.
If he lands that 1-2 that he landed against the burn, I believe anybody's going down. I don't care who they are.
I tell you what, though, and this is not a knock on Klitschko or anything like that, but I think Wilder gets him out of there. Like at that age that Klitschko was at when that fight happened, I just think that's what he like. That was his main issue. He could have finished them in that round, and just couldn't put him away. That's how
round
I feel
five,
about
yeah.
it. You know what I mean?
I can tell you that, you know, the big concern going into the first Areola fight was an assumption that writers and media made and fans made, was that Deontay couldn't go rounds because he had never had to. We knew in the gym that, you know, we were on good solid ground with Deontay's conditioning, and he proved, and that question went away really quick.
Yeah, you don't hear that anymore.
Can Deontay go round? After the first burn fight, we didn't really hear any more about that. And then he goes 9 with Molina, 11 with Duopa, 9 with Areola, and so on. So the questions about his stamina evaporated. So I can tell you one thing. Deontay fights Joshua. Deontay, you know, he will not have a stamina problem, and if Joshua does, that will be a big problem for Joshua.
Yeah, like I feel like Deontay could pull the trigger, and that was the problem with Klitschko. I think he couldn't. And that's what I meant
right.
to say. Like you know what I mean? But that's why I think, plus, if you get hit like that by Wilder, you're not getting up, you know.
He's a different beast, for sure.
You might get up and ask the question, like, what time is the fight? But,
you know. Well, he's, you know, Deontay's still learning and still growing as a fighter, just now entering his prime. So we're really excited about 2018.
Yeah, I can only imagine. I mean, I'm hoping, you know, by the summer that you guys could have this mega fight, because it is a mega fight. You know, when it's over there or over here, to me, it doesn't matter. I just want to see it. So.
Yeah, I think it's a huge fight. It'd be the biggest fight in boxing when it occurs, you know, biggest fight of the year. And, you know, the bigger
so.
The stage, the more Deontay likes it.
Yeah.
Here's my thing that happening over in England is I don't believe it does. It's pay-per-view over here if it happens in England. Because you'd be, what are you doing, 4 o'clock on Saturday evening? You know what I mean? 4 o'clock, 4 o'clock
right,
on Saturday
right.
evening?
Yeah, I'm not sure how that'll work. I mean, it would be pay-per-view over there and would not be pay-per-view over here. Something for that fact.
Yeah.
Probably Showtime.
Yeah.
Yeah, both
that's
of us.
That's okay. It's more people to see him become
sure.
unified champion. That's all that
yeah.
means.
Let me ask you a question, Jack. I don't know. I've been asked this several times, and I can't find it nowhere. Is it exclusive with Showtime?
Say that again?
Is Deontay exclusive with Showtime?
No, it's a fight-by-fight thing, but Showtime's been
that's
really
exactly
good to
what
us.
That's exactly what I told him.
Yeah, Deontay's also fought on NBC and Fox.
He's
fought on several different networks, but Showtime's been really great to work with, and Joshua was working with Showtime as well. So,
The reason I ask is we know Eddie Hearn just Jacob's HBO, and I know that HBO's according to Peter Nelson, they put in a pretty good price on Joshua, trying to get Joshua. Money to spend after losing.
Yeah, I'm not sure where all that is right now. It's going to be interesting.
That's the reason about his exclusivity with Showtime, because I don't think prevent the Joshua switch. And I know he's on a fight-by-fight basis now with Showtime as well. I do know that.
Right. Showtime and HBO have worked together. When it served their needs, they're able to work it out and work together. So.
Yeah, I'm going to be with you. I've been doing it. Like I said, I've been in the media quite a while, quite some time now. And I'm not going to say this, but Peter is he really is. And I don't expect it. He's a good guy. Stephen seems to be a good guy.
Yeah.
And you work with him a lot.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'm sorry, you guys are starting to break up. I couldn't hear much of what you just said. I'm sorry, guys. I'm hearing about every 10th word. I'm sorry.
Hello? Chris?
No.
Yeah, you're breaking up.
Do you suffer from chronic CFED or can't focus energy drain? Try over-the-counter Vibrin. One tablet contains the same caffeine as a cup of coffee, but without the calories or coffee breath. Vibrin, caffeine, not coffee. Taking Vibrin may result in a lack of drowsiness, improved productivity, and better cash flow from decreased coffee spending. Unexpected job promotions have been associated with Vibrin. Vibrin may decrease the urge to zone out, doze off, or exhibit signs of slacking. All jokes aside, always read the label, take only as directed, and limit caffeine as it may cause real side effects. Not for children under age 12. Do you suffer from chronic CFED or can't focus energy drain? Try over-the-counter Vibrin. One tablet contains the same caffeine as a cup of coffee, but without the calories or coffee breath. Vibrin. Caffeine. Not coffee. Taking Vibrin may result in increased productivity and decreased dread in setting alarms. Unexpected enjoyment of the graveyard shift has been associated with Vibrin. Vibrin may be a better budget option than drinking coffee. It may also decrease the urge to doze off, skip work, or exhibit signs of slacking. All jokes aside, always read the label, take only as directed, and limit caffeine as it may cause real side effects. Not for children under age 12.